Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our talk show for the morning. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. On the program today, we will be doing another in a series of shows that we have been doing going back to last fall, looking at various aspects of literacy. It's something that we're doing in partnership with the National Council of Teachers of English, a national organization that's based in Urbana. If you're interested, by the way, in finding out about the council and what they do, and you have access to the internet, you can go to their website, which is www.ncte.org. Our guest this morning is Dr. Katie Ray. She is a full-time writer and researcher on the teaching of writing. She is particularly interested in the study of writing craft. She leads teacher workshops and institutes across the country related to the teaching of writing. She has been both an elementary and middle school teacher and spent 2 years as a staff developer at the Reading and Writing Project at Teachers College at Columbia University. She's also the author or co-author of 4 books on the teaching of writing. And among other things this morning, we'll be talking about how to read like a writer. And if your first reaction is, what exactly does that mean? Stick around and we'll tell you about it. As, of course, we talk here, as always, questions from people who are listening are welcome. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us. First of all, of course, if you are listening over the air around Illinois and Indiana, but if you might happen to be listening on the internet and you're in the United States, you may use the toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455. So, again, it's 333-WILL, which probably does not make it any easier. 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Dr. Ray, hello.
Good morning.
Thanks for talking with us today.
You're welcome.
Of all the things that one might teach, I guess I'm curious maybe to start out with what particularly caused you to gravitate toward writing and teaching writing?
When I had my first teaching job, you know, I was charged with teaching writing, reading and writing. I was a language arts teacher what at the time was a junior high. Now mostly they're on a more middle school concept, but it was a junior high school teaching 7th and 8th grade language arts and realized I was supposed to teach reading and writing, and I really had not had any very specific training in teaching writing in my teacher preparation program. I was an English major in college and, you know, thought I was going to be a high school English teacher, but got a job instead teaching 7th grade. And so I really started out not knowing much at all about what to do to teach writing. And then I guess in the second year that I was teaching, I began to take classes working towards a master's in the evening. And one of the very first courses I took at Clemson University was a language arts course. And we read what at the time was a brand new book by Nancy Atwell called In the Middle that was all about reading and writing workshops. And I just got very interested, you know, in that teaching and what it could look like. It gave me a vision for teaching writing that I hadn't had, you know, because I hadn't had it in my own experience in schooling. And it just kind of grew from there. There's probably a part of me that that just loves writing, you know, itself, because I do enjoy writing. And so I was probably drawn to the teaching of it even more so than maybe in some ways the teaching of reading, just because I enjoy writing so much myself.
One thing I'm interested in is the idea, and I think you certainly touch on it in some of the things that you have written that I have looked at, and that is that perhaps when we teach literature, that is, say, people like you who go to university and take classes in literature, there's a lot of analysis of the writing. But it seems that in most cases, people spend a lot of time thinking about and talking about what it is about, and not so much time looking at how it is the writer achieved the effect that he or she did. And I think that that's interesting why it is that there would seem to be so much concentration on meaning and so little on method.
Yeah. I don't know either, because certainly, you know, writers say, And by the way, the whole way we kind of got interested in looking at how things were written and using that as a way to help students write better was we read, you know, interviews and articles by professional writers who all say if you want to write well, what you need to do is read. And it got us to begin thinking about how would a person who also writes read, and it, would that be a different kind of reading that they would do? And you know, one thing for sure is that people who also write tend to notice not just what things are about, but how they're written. And just as anyone who's a craftsperson at anything notices that aspect of their craft when they see it, you know, see it actualized somewhere. So, you know, I don't know why, and people ask me this all the time in my work, you know, why hasn't anyone ever said this so directly before that we need to look at how things are written if we're trying to learn to write? And I don't know why. It took us, you know, some time as a profession to really make that connection, but now lots of people are making it in lots of places, and it's really exciting work.
Mm-hmm. You write about that, some of the experiences that you've had in the classroom, and I imagine other teachers have had too, trying to help students who are frustrated because they have ideas. Mm-hmm. They have great ideas, and yet somehow they don't know how to realize them, and when they try to get them down, they look at what they put down on the page and they say to themselves, you know, what I had in mind was so much different, it was so much bigger, it had so much more impact, mm-hmm. and now when I've put it down on the page, it seems to have shrunk. Your piece of advice there to the teachers who are in that situation is, yes, you may indeed feel frustrated because you don't quite know how to tell them to do it either, but you don't have to do that by yourself.
Right.
There is lots of help available and in the form of other kinds of writing. So that's
right.
Where we get to this idea of what it means to read like a writer.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean, reading like a writer?
Well, in large part, it means reading with a sense of possibility. I mean, if you're someone who writes too, then when you read, the different things that you see happening in text, you know, become possibilities for things that you might try. I mean, ways that people use language, one of the big misconceptions is that every writer has some sort of, you know, very unique style, every accomplished writer, and that's actually, you know, that's just not true. It's individual, but it's not unique. You see lots of different things that writers do with text, with structures of text, with ways of constructing sentences, you know, approaches to different genres, lots of similarity when you really begin to look at how things are written. You know, what they're doing is not unique. So when you start to notice how things are written, you see that. And a person who's writing, you know, is sort of gathering a repertoire of possibilities for what they could do with that idea they've gotten. Of course, you know, it's our ideas that really make us individual as writers. They're not unique either. I mean, lots of people write about the same kinds of things, but they are individual. And so we start with that, you know, what is it that kids have to say? What do they know about? What do they care about and want to write about? And then our teaching is about helping them get a lot of visions of what's possible that they could do with those ideas. You know, most people know revision as part of the writing process, but revision, when it's strong and good, really starts out with a person having had a vision to begin with, you know, of what it is they were trying to do with the piece of writing, and the vision. We believe that visions for what you're trying to do come from your reading life. That you know you have a clear sense of what it is you're trying to write, and that again comes from the repertoire of things you know are possible inside a particular kind of writing that you're doing. So reading like a writer is really just looking closely at how things are written, noticing how they're written. Lots of times it happens when you don't even, you know, intend for it to. You know, two or three mornings a week when I'm reading the newspaper, I'll go and cut something out because I think that the way the writer has written it is interesting, and I want to be able to show it to the people I teach. So, you know, I'm not even trying to do it. I'm really reading just to find out what's going on. But because I notice how things are written, it happens all the time.
Well, this, I think this gets at an important idea to get across. And I'm sure that it's an important idea to get across to teachers. And that is that we can find many, many examples of creative use of language out there in the world, and that it's okay for students to look at them and to say, now, here, this is pretty interesting to see what this writer has done. Maybe I'll try that. Mm-hmm. And it seems the problem is that that runs smack up against this idea that also, I'm sure we tell students either sort of directly or indirectly, we say, well, we want their work to be original. The original copying is bad. Mm-hmm. So maybe they get the idea, or we have this idea that there's something. It goes back to this sort of idea that writing is individual, but it's not unique. Maybe right. They have this idea that, well, they can't, somebody else did that, so because they did that first, that means, well, I can't do that myself.
Right. Well, what we usually do, I mean, one of the ways you come to understand that is you don't just show them one example of a writer doing it, you show them five examples of different writers mm-hmm. doing the same exact thing with language. I mean, you take something as simple as a repeated phrase in a text, and one of the ways that writers will tie vignettes together that go together is they'll use a repeated phrase, you know, to do that. And I can stack up, you know, 20 different texts and probably even more than that where a writer has done that. I mean, the one that everyone knows is, you know, the part of the Martin Luther King speech, I Have a Dream. The part that everyone remembers works that way. I mean, there was more to that speech than that, but right in this one section of text, he begins to weave that dream, and he keeps repeating, you know, I have a dream. And we see that. I've got articles from Sports Illustrated that do that, editorials from the newspaper. The first chapter of John Grisham's book, The Partner, does this, you know, for about eight paragraphs. It has this repeating phrase, they found him, they found him. We've got lots of picture books for children that use that same text structure. So you show kids, you know, you understand the structure as separate from that single text, and that's when it becomes something possible for you as well, that it's not like writing your own version of someone else's text. You really have separated the how it's written from the text itself when you can see it in several different places. And really all of the craft moves that we talk about are ways of using language. They're not that are available and that people use across genre, across writing for different kinds of audiences. You know, it's not writing your own version of someone else's text. Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a caller here. I want to bring them into the conversation, okay. But I think I probably should introduce again our guest for this part of Focus 580. Dr. Katie Woodway is a full-time writer and researcher of the teaching of writing. She's been a teacher herself at elementary and middle school levels. This is part of an occasional series we've been doing here on Focus 580, looking at various aspects of reading and writing, something we've been doing with the help of the folks at the National Council of Teachers of English based in Urbana. Questions and comments are certainly welcome here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, no matter where you're listening, 800-222-9455. Here's someone in Urbana to talk with us on line one. Hello.
Hi. I'm really glad that you're on the air right now because this strikes right to what I'm doing. I've left elementary teaching, but I am working as a consultant to help some students who are having trouble with writing. But the emphasis is all on the testing right now. The district wants us to teach very controlled writing so that the kids can do well on their state tests, which kind of flies in opposite everything that we know as writing teachers, so that they're given 40 minutes to write a piece and try to revise it. And I'm finding it very frustrating. And I wonder what you could offer to us as teachers with this problem of testing being the emphasis now.
Well, and it's, you know, you know that, I know it, I don't know whether it makes it less lonesome or not, but that you're not alone. People are struggling with that everywhere, and I'm sure you probably know that. What testing does more than anything else, in most cases, is it messes up the process of writing. Like you just said, it's to go from a topic you've never seen to a finished piece of writing in 40 minutes, apparently in your case. In my state here, it's just over an hour. I think it's 65 minutes. Is just, you know, no one writes that way, and it certainly doesn't doesn't reinforce good habits of process, to, if that's all you ever do. Most of the people I know who are really trying to responsibly deal with writing and also get kids ready for tests, just practice that process from time to time. You know, every 2 or 3 weeks or so, just take 40 minutes and try it. And use what the kids do during that period of time as assessment. You know, what are they, how are they managing the time? What do they still need to know about this particular kind of writing? And so that they get practice with that process. But then on top of that, you know, the bottom line is what you bring to the table when you sit down. You know, what you know about writing, what you know about how text work, what you know about how language works, will help you do well. You know, at the beginning of any school year, we have some kids who come to us and they could pass the writing test right then. And when someone asks us why, we say, well, they're just good writers. And so really curriculum and instruction should do everything it can to make kids good writers, to know lots about what good writing looks like, what it is, whatever the kind of writing it is that kids are going to be asked to do on a test. I would suggest really slow study of that kind of writing. What does it look like when it's good? Our fourth grade test here in North Carolina is a test of narrative writing. So, you know, a lot of fourth grade teachers spend a lot of time looking at just the basic story in literature and how does it work and how does it, you know, how do you deal with time? How do you move it through time? How do things change in a story? Really studying stories as they exist, because my experience is in most places, and we need to always find out, there are a lot of urban legends sometimes that float around about testing, you know, that they're looking for a kind of writing that doesn't exist in the world, and if they are, we need to be protesting. But in most cases, they're not. They're looking for good literature. I was on the committee here in our state last year that reviewed the process for scoring our tests, and I really came away with a lot of confidence that they are looking for, you know, good narrative writing. The kids who were scoring really well were the kids who obviously had a sense of literature and vision when they wrote their pieces. So, you know, really having faith in studying good examples of narrative writing, having kids write a lot of whatever the kind of writing it is they're going to be tested on in writing workshop, and then slowing down just from time to time to practice that format, because it is more than product, it's process that is artificial in testing. My experience is in most places the product is, you know, is not artificial. They want a good piece of literature. So studying that and then from time to time practicing that artificial process, that's my best recommendation for that. You know, I'm hoping within our lifetime we'll be able to have other kinds of assessments. I don't think there's anybody who doesn't want to be held accountable for good teaching, but what should that look like, and could we reimagine ways of looking at it that would get closer to what we really know people do when they write and write well?
Could I ask
that are cost effective.
Could I ask you real quickly, do you think that in that situation it's best to teach the children a real organized plan, such as a four-square or a five-paragraph essay, so they stick with that for that testing element only?
I think, and my experience practicing sort of looking at and scoring papers last year on that committee that looked at that is what that doesn't get the best scores on the paper because on the test, because you come away with these really formulaic things. Mm-hmm. There are certainly things that I would teach them to do in that situation that I wouldn't do otherwise, like thinking through sort of, you know, exactly what's the main thing that's going to happen in your piece of writing. Is yours a narrative test that you're getting them ready for, or what kind of writing is it?
The children do not know if they'll have narrative, expository, or persuasive when they open up their book.
Okay. Yeah, no, I would do some work around thinking through before you get ready to write it. Of course, we know that in real process, a lot of times your writing is actually a discovery process of, you know, what you want it to be and how it'll go, and you certainly don't have time to discover in 40 minutes what you want to do. So thinking through sort of what your main parts are going to be in a plan, I don't think is a bad idea. But remember that again, what you bring to the table about how that kind of writing works, how language works, really will make that more effective. So, you know, when you do take time out to just practice the test format, probably attaching to that lessons about how to handle the space of time you have, and you know, thinking it through before you write it, which the things you just mentioned are really ways of doing that, is not a bad idea connected to the testing part. I would not make that the mainstay of my teaching of writing, though, because if you do, you won't open yourself up to the potential of other ways that text can work.
Thank you very, very
You're
much.
You're welcome, and good luck to you.
All right, thanks for the call. We have someone else here, obviously, must be listening on the Internet because they're calling from St. Louis.
Okay.
On our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
My name is Julie Hume, and I am a third-grade advanced technology teacher in Jennings, Missouri.
I know Jennings.
I know.
I've been there.
Yeah, Kate, you just came last summer. We just wanted to let you know we're listening via Internet in our classroom. And two of the other classrooms are listening as well. I'm on my cell phone. but we just wanted to tell you how much your reading and writing workshop tech now, or, you know, your package that you sent us or gave us, the information that you gave us at our workshop has impacted our reading and writing workshop here. It's the biggest part of our day. Our kids love it. They have really put out some incredible pieces this year. And we've learned so much from you coming here and doing our staff development that we just found out about this, and we just wanted to give you a call and let you know thank you for everything that you've done, and to just keep up the great work that you're doing, and we'll be sure to follow you wherever you go next.
Oh, well, I'm speechless. Thank you. You know, it means a lot to me to know that this thing I'm putting so much energy into is helpful for people and pushing people forward, so that's great. Tell the people
I'm
working
glad.
On the first grade book. It should be finished soon. I was working on that, I think, last summer when I was there, and I'm, you know, really trying to address those issues of teaching the youngest writers. So let them know it's coming along.
Oh, good. Well, thank you. Is it okay if my kids say hi to you real fast?
Yes,
sure.
It is.
Okay, say hi. Anyway, we just wanted to say thanks. We got to get back to class, but we just wanted to say thanks.
Okay.
All right. Everybody there should get back to work.
That's what thank you.
Thanks for the call. Other folks who are listening certainly are welcome to call. Let me introduce again our guest, Katie Wood Ray. She is a full-time writer and researcher of the teaching of writing. She taught at Western Carolina University. She was an associate professor of language arts education there for 8 years. She has also taught at elementary and middle school levels. She was for 2 years staff developer at the Reading and Writing Project at Teachers College at Columbia University. She's the co-author of 4 books on the teaching and writing, and also published many articles and book chapters. She's talking with us this morning about the teaching of writing, and questions, comments are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Something else that you've written, and I think I'd like to ask you about in part of your writing about teaching people to read, particularly students to read like writers. You write that what's essential to understand is for our students to learn to read like writers, they first have to see themselves as writers. And I'm sure that that there probably are some students who seem to have the drive to be a writer, and for a lot of people, I'm sure that they would say, a lot of people who now make their living as writers say, I can't not write, that it's almost a compulsion to do. And I'm sure that probably there are some students who see themselves as being writers, just like there are some who see themselves as being astronauts or doctors or scientists or whatever. But I don't imagine that there are that many. And that it's something that for a lot of people, they don't see themselves as writers. A writer is an occupation. John Grisham is a writer. Mm-hmm. But me, I'm not, you know, I'm not a writer. How do you, for all of the other kids in the classroom, you know, there may be one or two who say, yeah, I'm a writer. I'm going to be a writer. And they're really enthusiastic about it. And you can't stop them. But there are the others that feel that it's difficult. How do you get those kids to see themselves as writers?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, one thing about it is we're not, my vision, I think about this sometimes, like, is my vision that everyone will grow up to be a professional writer, and it's not. I mean, I think the world might be a nice place, but, you know, somebody has to do the work. Somebody has to run the bank and stuff like that. So we really don't. What we do envision kids, you know, the world that they'll live in is that they'll feel like if somebody says, could you put that in writing, you know, they have the confidence to do that, no matter what occasion in their life would call for that. And also, this just this whole habit of mind of whatever kind of thing you need to write, you know how to learn about it. Like, you know that you need to read the kind of stuff that you want to write. So that if you grow up and you go to law school, you know you need to study how legal briefs are written, not just, you know, what's in them, but how they're written, so that you can learn to do that. So the habit of mind, we want to go with them in the classroom. You know, the bottom line is, if we're charged with teaching kids to write, then one of the requirements is that they write, and the only way you're going to learn to write is to write. And so whatever kind of stuff, you know, it is that we're teaching you to write, if it's editorials, if it's stories, if it's memoir, then we're going to read that kind of stuff, because you're supposed to write that kind of stuff. So the identity part is really that you're just a person who does this every day, because in my classroom you're going to do it every day. And, you know, in other parts of our lives we define ourselves that way, you know, by the stuff we do. I'm a person who, you know, rides motorcycles, and it's because I do that a lot that I can say that. And so in our classrooms, you're a writer just by the virtue that you're going to have to write every day, and that's really not optional. You know, we hope kids will like it and enjoy it, but even if they don't, if I'm charged with teaching you how to write, you've got to write, and you're going to have to write every day, and your first piece is due next Friday. And, you know, so you're a writer in that sense. And then, you know, getting you to look at what professional writers do really just has to do with this bottom line rule of thumb that whatever kind of thing I'm wanting you to write, I want you to study people who do it well. And that we always try and mind that, you know, we find examples for any kind of writing it is we want kids to do, so that they actually read the kind of thing we're asking them to write. And so in that sense, you are like this person, because you're gonna write that kind of thing too. And so it's really not a whole, you know, that we see you having this as a profession, but just that in this room, you're a person who writes, you know, every day, and you write this kind of stuff. So you're a writer in that sense.
Let's take another call. We have someone in Pena. That's line number one.
Okay.
Right here. Hello.
Hello. I was interested in your subject because I'm a retired teacher, 10 years retired. I taught 38 years, 5th and 6th grade. And my comment is, I love to do all these kind of things, but we never had time to do everything, because I taught all subjects. We had reading, spelling, language, definitions, punctuation, vocabulary, lots of time on grammar, the actual form of handwriting. My problem always was, and of course then we had social studies, science, math, we did keep a daily notebook or diary, but all I'm saying is there just doesn't seem to be enough time to do all these good things. That's just my comment. I'll just listen.
That's a good comment. Right. The bottom line is all those things have to, in the end, need to add up to something, and that's the actual writing. I believe, and I so respect your years of experience and your time in the classroom, and I'm, I come to you humbly at this point in my career, but I really believe we can spend a lot of time on the parts sometimes and not enough time on what they're actually supposed to come together to mean. And, you know, a lot of us spent time in school this way, and we never actually really wrote that much stuff, and which is one of the reasons why I work with a lot of adults who don't feel very confident as writers, because they've never actually written very much. They know a lot about, you know, the kinds of things you mentioned, but they don't know how to bring them together into a text. And, you know, the world that we live in, there's a lot of technological help now for things like handwriting. I mean, most people in the professional world, you know, wouldn't put a piece of writing out in their handwriting. Of course, they would word process it. And so it's, in some ways, it's given us time to really work on composition. And, you know, just the bottom line is, if you want people to be able to be a competent writer, someone who can answer the charge of, can you put that in writing, I just think they need to have written a lot of stuff. certainly one of the things I'm very interested in, and if you read my work, it's so in there, is the idea of the talk of language and how it works. And grammar talk is so much embedded in what we do when we look at how things are written. I mean, we're always talking about sentence structure and, you know, what work is the verb doing and this sort of thing. But we look at it from the stance of how can this help me know more about how to write well, rather than just I need to know verbs. And so it's kind of a different stance, that we see everything as a tool for writing well, and that we spend time writing well. So most teachers who are, you know, who find the time to do this have kind of realized that all those separate parts you mentioned collapse into the act of writing, and that we get kids writing, we get them composing, making pieces of literature, we look to see which parts they need help with. You certainly can't read and write a lot without and talk about it a lot without, you know, gaining more and more knowledge of vocabulary, which you mentioned. So we're trying to figure out ways to make them come together into the actual act of composition, which is the hard part. You know, all the component parts you can kind of work at, but sitting down and making it come out into a good piece of writing takes years of experience. And so we're putting some of that experience into school and trying to bring those together into what they're really meant for, which is composition.
This gives me the opportunity to ask another of these questions that I wanted to raise. And obviously, it's a big one, and I know that you've written on it, because you do workshops, you do writing workshops with teachers and with students. I'm sure that a lot of teachers say something like, we're writing all the time, all day long. Why do we need to do a special workshop on writing?
Mm-hmm. Two main reasons, I think. One is, when you look at that kind of writing that it is all day long, a lot of it is not composition. It's not the really hard work of going from an idea on the whole journey all the way to a finished piece of writing that you think, you know, is your best work, it's going to communicate to an audience, that composition part, the hard part. A lot of it is reflecting, you know, on something that you've done. Sometimes you're writing down observations, you're writing down responses to things, and it's all writing to support your life. It's all important writing. It all helps you be fluent, but it's also easy writing compared to composition, which is all the way from an idea to a finished piece. And that's the hard thing. That's the thing that a lot of people came out of school with, not confident that they could do. So that's one issue, is that the writing that happens all day long a lot of times is not that hard work of composition. And I just think the only way people are going to get good at that is with a lot of experience. The other thing is curriculum. Most of the writing that's done the rest of the day is done in the service of other curriculum, and there's no actual teaching of writing. And you know, especially since we've learned to study craft, there's just so many things that you can actually teach people that will help them write well. You know, I think a lot of us, when we were in school, we were kind of, the message was communicated that some people are just good at writing and other people aren't, and there's not a whole lot you can do about it. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't really believe that. I think there are all kinds of things I can teach you about how writing works that will help you write way better than you ever thought you could, and I need time to teach those. There's a lot of curriculum around how to write well that gets lost if there's no teaching of writing, if it's just kind of, you know, well, we write to explain our math problems, and believe me, I think all that writing is important, but it's not composition, and it doesn't have the curriculum of how to compose well attached to it. So that's, you know, and that's certainly a belief that I have, but that's the sort of information that informs it.
Well, I think you said something there actually very important, that's important in a global sort of a sense, because I think so often we say something like, well, you know, some people are just good at fill in the blank and others aren't, and mm-hmm. either you are or you're not. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that that's much true about too many things, but and yet that people get this idea, you know, you see it happen with kids in math. You see it happen with kids in science. You see it happen with kids in art. And I'm sure the same thing with writing. They say, well, either you're a born mathematician or you're not. Well, that's just hooey. And yet people say that. They say that of themselves. They say that of their children. It seems that it's just a matter it's a lot more about teaching than it is about what people were born to be or do.
And it's, you know, it's a really a deep belief in the power of teaching that, you know, I believe I can work with you in ways that will make a difference. And you know, I think we've been able for years to let ourselves traditionally off the hook in writing. And again, just, you know, while I can help you edit well, but it, either you've got it or not in terms of whether it's good. And we just don't believe that anymore. I mean, certainly I believe in talent. I think there are some people, for whatever reason, that things just sort of come to, you know, more easily, particularly ways of seeing the world that inform their writing. But they're first of all, habits of mind you can nurture that can help you, you know, think better like a writer. And then there's all kinds of technique and strategy work that you can learn to do in terms of how the language works that will help you, you know, take an idea and write it well.
We have some other callers here. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Katie Wood Ray. Questions welcome. We're talking about teaching writing. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next up is Champagne. We have two Champagne callers here. Next is line number two, right here. Hello.
Hello there.
Mm-hmm.
I had a comment about, I understand, you know, how important it is to learn how to write when you're young and everything, but when you get older and you're trying to be productive at it, I don't know too many people who enjoy it. Even if you look at some of these books by Stephen King or The Lives of Hemingway and Faulkner, and these guys didn't really enjoy it. They became alcoholics because it was painful for them. And, it sort of worked out well for them because they knew how to write and everything. But even so, today, you were saying, like, how it's difficult to have somebody hand you a topic and write about it. Well, there's a lot of people who query periodicals and editors and agents to find out what it is they want to print and go from there, because it's a better way to make money. And I know a lot of people then, of course, who do enjoy spending the money after they've made it, but writing itself you're not always supposed to like it. It's hard work.
It's very hard work.
Yeah.
I mean, I write sometimes, you know, 8 or 9 hours a day. And I never, when I'm teaching, say that it's not hard. But, you know, people don't always dislike things that are hard. There's ways in which, too, especially when you go from an idea to a piece of writing that people read and they get and it makes a difference, that this is an incredibly satisfying thing. And, again, my vision for the students that I work with is that they will grow into adults who will, if someone, and I'm just sort of using this expression as a metaphor, if someone says, could you put that in writing, they feel confident that they can. Whether it's a letter to the editor, a letter to, you know, to their boss, that they have a confidence about writing that they can take something that needs to be said and say it. And that's not always easy work. You know, there's no question about that. And I know that because I do it. But, you know, that doesn't make it something that I don't like, because it's challenging and it's hard. You know, finding a balance of understanding between those two continuums, I think, probably is a challenge for people who teach people how to write.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of periodicals out there that are starving for people to send stuff and contribute, mm-hmm. and don't pay money for it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes kids wonder, what's the point, you know? Why am I learning how to do this? When I get older, I'm not going to use it. Mm-hmm. But Reader's Digest pays $300 for a story about, you know, humor and uniform or something,
mm-hmm.
like that. But
yep.
Nonetheless,
all right.
That's it.
Well, thanks. Let's go on here to another Champagne person. This is line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
First off, I actually just want to mention that the caller earlier, the teacher from Pena, actually was my sixth grade teacher. I haven't been to Pena in years, so that was kind of strange.
You recognized his voice?
I did.
How fun.
Yeah. My question is, I'm actually at a little bit of a different stage. I've written 3 completed novels, and as you were talking earlier, one of those people who seems not to be able to not write, that unfortunately sometimes has been myself. But I wonder if you discussed much, this is something I got absolutely nothing of during college, was how to go about the publishing of novels. Mm. And I know that's a little off topic, but again, that's one of those things. I've written and written and written and written, and now I'm turning relatively middle age, and I think perhaps I should try to get this published.
Yeah. you know, there are teachers who do some wonderful work with actually getting kids to submit things for publications to periodicals, magazines. They have the writer's market. You know about writer's market, which
yes.
comes out every year, and you know they have copies of those in children's writer's market in their room. You know, but I don't know that it, you know, in a lot of classrooms that it's a big emphasis. I mean, we kind of use the word go publish. Publish in the sense of go public with it, you know, get it to the audience that you wrote it for. And we are trying to really step up and do the work of having kids, you know, write for real audiences, even if it's just, you know, they're writing a piece about fishing and you say, well, you know, I know Mr. Sanders, you know, who works in the gym, loves fishing. Maybe you could give this to him when you're finished. So in some ways we use publishing like that, go public with the writing, but you know, some teachers do work with how to get published, but and have kids sending stuff off. But you know, it's probably something we could do more of, especially if we've really got kids, you know, who want to do that, as obviously you did when you were in that phase. So,
well, the reason I thought it's important is because again, it's one of those things that there is a craft to getting published,
mm-hmm.
technique, and. In studying writing in my undergraduate and graduate classes, we talked all about the function of the actual creating of the art. But I realized when I graduated with a master's that I had never even conceived of what to do with it once I get it written.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought I'd put that out there. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Well, thanks for the call. Let's go to a caller in Indiana, Kingman, Indiana, on our toll-free line. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
You've touched on a subject that's fairly near and dear to my heart. I'm very grateful to my junior high and high school English teachers for teaching me how to write. It's opened up doors for me professionally. People have been able to hand things to me and say, we need this polished. We need this put together in a professional way. Would you do that? And that's been a real thrill for me. One of my pet peeves are corporate managers who cannot spell, cannot put a decent sentence together, and issue memos left, right, and center that are unclear, confusing, and do nothing but stir the dust. And there are so many times in my professional life I would like to take those memos and those managers and just say, now look, wait a minute, you can't put it like this. You have to put it like that. So good luck.
Thank you.
I hope more teachers teach English better in schools. I think we'd have a better corporate America for it.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. We have about 5 minutes left. Other questions, if somebody wants to call real quick, we could get you in, probably. Otherwise, you know, something that that we have not touched on, and it's 5 minutes is not enough, but let me just raise the point, and that is, and particularly when we're talking about creative writing, you know, it seems that in school we teach spelling, we teach grammar, we teach sentence structure, we teach rules, and often sometimes I think we tell the kids, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. Then, though, if we do this thing that you encourage us to do, that is to read like writers, look for interesting examples of technique. When you start doing that, you start seeing, wait a minute, this writer here, they broke the rule. And over here, this writer broke the rule. And I think, in fact, a lot of places you see really creative rule breaking is in children's literature, maybe a little bit more so than writing for the adult market. How do you balance the need to observe some basic rules with the getting across to kids the idea that by breaking the rules, you can have greater impact, you can get across greater meaning, you can really do something by using the language in a, if not an original way, an unconventional way?
Two things. One is it's in all kinds of writing. I've really opened, you know, I have collections of any kind of writing where somebody wants people to read it, whether it's an editorial, it's a news, you get off the front page of the newspaper and get into your feature articles and things. If people want it to read it, they'll do what they need to do with language to make it work right, make it a strong piece. I'm very big on kids learning how our language works, but I don't think that how our language works exists outside of how it's used. I mean, grammar books didn't exist before the language, so it's a chicken and egg thing. The language came first, and when you look at all the different ways that it's used, that's all it is. There's not something else to know other than how people actually use it. So we're constantly trying to figure out, you know, how is this used? And the more you know about how different things get used, the more adept you are at using it. You know, I don't think that kids should know less about language. I think they need to know more. But I do think that we should match that to what's really out there, and that we don't want to, like, stand and make up rules that really don't apply to most any kind of writing you look at. You know, maybe it's the rule that's misunderstood. And sometimes the things that writers do with language are actually very rule-based. They've taken it and exploited it, so we talk that through too. But, you know, I just believe that all language is how it's used and how it exists. And, I mean, look at the impact of email and instant messaging on the evolution of language and how it's being used. It's huge. And I would say within our lifetime, we're going to see really interesting things happen to language use. And, you know, reading like writers helps you sort of keep up with the evolution of that and understand it in that way. So
we'll try and get one real quick, one more person here. Urbana,
okay.
Line one. Hello.
So I need to give a short answer, huh?
Okay. You'd actually touched on what I was going to ask on about the internet, because I teach at a university where email messages are sometimes incoherent, even among professionals, you know. And I'm wondering, how do you get students to make that transition from, or even adults, to understand that, yes, the language is flexible, we use it in different ways in different settings, but when you switch from the screen to a piece of paper, you really have to, you know, make that transition to a different way of using language.
It's funny, because people have been so hard on kids for so long, you know, all their writing is just full of this and that, and now that people are emailing each other, we actually get to see a lot more adults writing than we've ever seen before.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's actually adults do it too. And
yeah.
You know, some of it is the social mores around that are changing. You know, we used to, if somebody had handwritten a note and misspelled something, we thought, oh my,
mm-hmm.
how awful. And now you see it and you go, well, that must be a typo. You know, you just pass it off a lot of times. And I don't have an answer to that, except to say that the way that people look at written language is evolving all the time. And, you know, hopefully we would have a lot of professional sort of interest in what we're sending out and would think that through. But, you know, I do it too. I've sent out emails that had typos in them,
mm-hmm.
and I get it back and go, oh my, how did I miss that? I think it's the pace with which we use language now has so increased, and so many more people are out there using it that we're actually seeing, you know, it's not just kids who when they use language fast, it's goof. Everybody does. And, you know, I don't know where it'll go. It'll be interesting to see where we are with it in 20 years, won't it?
Yeah, it will. Well, thank you for an interesting program.
All right.
You're welcome.
And there we must end,
okay.
Because we've used our time. And to you, Dr. Ray, I want to say thanks very much for giving us some of your time. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Our guest, Katie Wood Ray. She's a full-time writer and researcher of The Teaching of Writing. This is a show that we have been doing, a part of a series of programs looking at aspects of writing and reading with the assistance of the folks at the National Council of Teachers of English in Urbana. And if you're interested in learning more about that organization, go to their website, www.ncte.org. Programming here on AM 580 made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nickel, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at thriftynickel.com. Programming also made possible by grants from 10,000 villages in downtown Champaign and Crossroads Global Handcrafts, 428 North Main in Bloomington, providing income to third world artisans by marketing their handicrafts and telling their stories in North America.